This is VOA News. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey. Britain's Queen Elizabeth sat alone inside historic St. George's Chapel during the funeral of Prince Philip, the man who had been by her side for 73 years. Philip died April 9th at 99 years old, and he was laid to rest Saturday in the Royal Vault at Windsor Castle near London after a funeral service reflecting his military and royal tradition. People across Britain observed 1 minute of silence on a sunny afternoon in his honor just before the royal ceremonial funeral got underway. The funeral and a procession before the chapel was out of public view within the grounds of the castle, but the event was shown live on television worldwide. Russia says it caught a Ukrainian diplomat spying and will expel him, leading Ukraine to order a Russian diplomat to leave, and further escalating tensions over Moscow's troop buildup on Ukraine's border. Russia has detained several Ukrainian nationals on suspicion of spying in recent years, but the arrest of a diplomat is rare. Ukraine's foreign ministry rejects Russia's accusations. Tensions between Russia and Ukraine come against the background of a renewed friction between Moscow and Washington as U.S. President Joe Biden seeks a tougher line against Putin. The Biden administration on Thursday announced sanctions and the expulsion of 10 Russian diplomats for what the White House says is Kremlin's U.S. election interference, a massive cyber attack, and other hostile activity. Russia said Friday it would expel U.S. diplomats and sanction U.S. officials in response. You can find more on these stories and the rest of the day's news at voanews.com. You can also follow us on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. COVID-19 has claimed the lives of more than 3 million people globally, according to the U.S. Tracking Group at Johns Hopkins University. The landmark death toll comes as the world has begun to roll out vaccine programs to combat the deadly virus, but many places are experiencing a surge in cases. The World Health Organization is concerned about the continued global increase in new COVID-19 infections, saying the weekly number of new cases has more than doubled over the past 2 months, approaching the highest infection rate since the pandemic began. The WHO says infection numbers began to rise steadily in February, following 6 consecutive weeks of decline. Myanmar's junta leader will join a special regional summit next week, his first official trip since the February 1st coup, which deposed civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Hundreds of thousands of protesters have taken to the streets in the past few months to demand a return to democracy. A local monitoring group says the military has killed more than 720 people and detained some 3,100 activists, journalists, and dissidents. Thailand confirmed Saturday that a summit of Southeast Asian leaders in Jakarta on Myanmar's situation will include the country's senior general. The meeting of the 10-country bloc of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations will be on April 24th. Activists are disappointed with foreign leaders recognizing the junta. A prison official says Myanmar's jails are also releasing more than 23,000 prisoners nationwide, part of its annual amnesty for its new year. There have been two other mass releases since the coup. It's unclear if those released Saturday include anyone detained since the February 1st overthrow. An Italian judge is ordering former Interior Minister Matteo Salvini to stand trial for having refused to let a Spanish migrant rescue ship dock in an Italian port. Salvini is accused of kidnapping for having kept the migrants at sea off the coast for days in August 2019. The right-wing leader claims he did the right thing under Italian law, defending the security and dignity of Italy by refusing entry to the rescue ship. And protesters in several U.S. cities took to the streets again Friday, calling for change over the latest police shootings. Demonstrations continue in the state of Minnesota nearly a week after a 20-year-old black man was shot and killed by a white police officer. It happened in Brooklyn Center, a short distance from Minneapolis, where George Floyd died in a fatal arrest last year, another black man who died in the custody of a white officer. Floyd's trial is now nearing a verdict. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Maybe the things will come down and probably they will start to get ready for the election. But so far, we haven't seen nothing, no candidates moving, no planning on the on election and anything. So, yes, they are worried. They are worried about it.
Malian political parties launch plans to begin campaigning ahead of next year's general election.
The country is facing a new problem, and it's better for the government to solve first this problem before talking about justice for the murder of our former president Thomas Sankara. I would say that those who are saying like this are right.
A Burkina Faso civil society group welcomes plans to prosecute former President Blaise Compaoré.
Dismantling the UPND structures and harvesting as many numbers as they possibly can. And so, yes, his impact is going to be felt, both on our end positively, but the UPND will feel the impact of Charles Kakoma, especially in Northwestern Province.
And representatives of Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front, or PF, unanimously choose incumbent President Edgar Lungu as the party's presidential candidate for the upcoming general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Political parties have launched plans to begin campaigning ahead of next year's general election. This following the transitional government's announcement that presidential and parliamentary elections will be held on February 27, 2022. But local media groups report reaction has been mixed. They say some Malians want a delay to ensure the political and security situation is conducive before the elections are organized. Others, however, say they welcome the announcement since they contend it will lead to legitimately elected leaders to administer the affairs of the country. For more about the latest developments following the announcement of the date for elections next year, I reached Salif Tigana, CEO of Tigana Technology in the Malian capital, Bamako.
There are some enthusiasm from some of the populations that we can see on social networks and from the local radios, but also there are a lot of people, most of them activists, that are saying that we're not going to meet the deadline because all the reforms that are needed to be carried out in order to have a fair and free election, we're not going to be able to do that. So therefore, they think this deadline is not going to work. So we're going to have to go for maybe more than 18 months. But as I said, yes, there are some people, some enthusiasm from some political headquarters, from some population. Yes, of course, that is reality.
So what has been the reaction of some leaders of the M5 who led the demonstration pushing for the former president to resign?
I haven't heard any, I'd say, official voice from the M5 in reaction to the deadline so far. But I think there will be, they will do some sort of reaction to it shortly. I think so.
Salif, are political parties taking steps in terms of organization, in terms of campaigning, in terms of getting themselves ready for next year's election, following the timetable that was announced for elections?
Yeah, it sounds like that's what we are noticing right now in Mali. We have seen a lot of political parties organizing what they called entrée politique. We have seen CODEM of Amion Gindo doing it. We have seen URD doing the same. And we have seen even some independent candidates going inside Mali, going to region like Mopti, trying to mobilize people to their program. And we have seen a lot of movement going on in Bamako. And also you can see even in the Facebook, people are creating some ads trying to advertise themselves, their vision from Mali, for Mali and everything. So all these things shows that, yeah, they're getting ready for the election. But I'm not sure if they are ready for this deadline, or they are just getting ready for election and, you know, hoping that the deadline will be something that will fit their agenda or not. But yes, we have seen a lot of movement here in Mali that are indicating that, yes, they are getting ready.
Are there any assurances from the authorities that they will keep to the timetable, since some people are still doubtful that the timetable will be kept, that elections will be organized, just like as they said?
Yeah, that's the main reason why a lot of people have doubts about the deadline, because they haven't given any answers that they will keep the promise. Also, people believe that if they did that, it's because U.S. government has put them a pressure. I think it's happened in the last U.N. meeting in which the U.S. representatives said that the transition needed to set a date for the election. So, yeah, actually, a lot of people's doubt is based on the fact that they don't see no commitment to meet the deadline.
I understand supporters of the former president are unhappy about the current development in the country and following the announcement of the elections next year. What are you hearing on the ground?
Yeah, we heard a lot of noise from the former regime supporters. They are worried about how the prisoners that are in prison are going to be treated and how the justice is going to be carried out. Is justice are going to prevent their candidate from running the presidency? That's all the questions that are raising now. And you can hear from them in local radios and in social networks. Yes, they are worried about that. And I think as soon as those things can be resolved, maybe the things will come down and probably they will too will get start to get ready for the election. But so far, we haven't seen nothing, no candidates moving, no planning on the election and anything. So yes, they are worried. They are worried about it.
Salif Tigana is the CEO of Tigana Technology. He spoke with me from the Malian capital, Bamako. In Burkina Faso, Stand for Life and Liberty, a civil society group, is welcoming as a positive step plans to prosecute former President Blaise Compaoré. The group is also calling on the authorities to go after those who played key roles in the 1987 coup that led to the assassination of the country's former president, Captain Thomas Sankara. Mr. Compaoré led the coup that toppled his friend Sankara. He has denied being behind Sankara's murder. But this week, a court in Burkina Faso charged former President Compaoré for the assassination. In 2014, Compaoré was forced into exile in Ivory Coast. This following a popular uprising after 27 years in power. He has since become an Ivorian citizen, where he is believed to still reside. Some legal analysts say it will be difficult to extradite Compaoré to Burkina Faso to face trial due to his close relationship with Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara. For more about the calls by Stand for Life and Liberty for the prosecution of those responsible for the murder of Thomas Sankara, I reach Abdul Ibudu, a leading member of the group in the Burkinabe capital, Ouagadougou.
You know, Thomas Sankara, since 1983 until today, until nowadays, you know, is the role model of young leaders in Burkina Faso and in generally in Africa. Then the process of Blaise Compaoré about in the murdering of Thomas Sankara is a good thing. Population in Burkina Faso and in general in Africa are welcoming this news. But now, what some say is that, you know, if we have to do the process of Blaise Compaoré in the murder of the former president Thomas Sankara, we have to include some other actors, because Blaise Compaoré at that time was not alone. He was supported by other actors, international actors, national actors, then if the process will be done, our will, our wish is that this process be done with all the actors, international and national. If not, it's better to let it down.
Abdul, I understand where you're coming from. However, some people are suggesting that since he was the leader of the coup, he should be held accountable, and that perhaps by prosecuting him, others can also be prosecuted who had a hand in the murder of Thomas Sankara. What do you say to that?
Yes, yes, as you said, it's exactly where I'm coming from. You know, it's not easy. The international actors, they are included in the murder of our former president, Thomas Sankara. Then I'm thinking about friends, I'm thinking about Ivory Coast, and other person, they are not alone. They are not alone. There are some other people who had their end in the murder of Thomas Sankara. Then if justice needs to be done, it needs to be done for all those who had the hand in the murder of Thomas Sankara.
How are the people of Burkina Faso reacting to the news that Blaise Compaoré will be prosecuted?
Many people was expecting the justice to be done for the murder of Thomas Sankara, our former president. But until now, they were waiting for nothing. But now to the news, talking about the news that Blaise Compaoré will be persecuted, some are welcoming this kind of news because it's a kind of salvation. It's a delightful idea that the author of this crime will be put in justice.
But Mr. Blaise Compaoré, or former President Blaise Compaoré, is now an Ivorian citizen. It will be difficult, some people argue, to extradite him to Burkina Faso to face trial. What is your reaction to that?
Okay. Here is a wonderful question that you put. You know, at the time being, Mr. Blaise Compaoré is an Ivory citizen. He's no more a Burkina Faso citizen. Then it will be very difficult for us, like Burkina Faso people, to make him come back in Burkina Faso. But, you know, we can make it come in Burkina Faso with the approval of Ivory Coast authorities. But now, personally, telling to Blaise Compaoré to come back in Burkina Faso is one thing. And another thing is that our country is facing some other things that are very important than making Blaise Compaoré back in Burkina Faso.
But Abdoulaye, that is why a lot of the supporters of President Blaise Compaoré are saying that the announcement that he will be prosecuted in Burkina Faso is just a public relations exercise or a publicity stunt, or the government wants to score cheap political points. That is why it is raising this issue, because the country faces a lot of problems, as you said. What do you say to that?
Okay, well, God, now, if I was a judge, I would say that those who are saying that the country is facing a new problem and it's better for the government to solve first this problem before talking about justice for the murder of our former president, Thomas Sankara, I would say that those who are saying like this are right. But I'm not a judge, and I am here to give my point of view.
Abdul Ibudu is a leading member of the Stand for Life and Liberty, a civil society group in Burkina Faso. He spoke with me from the Burkinabe capital, Ouagadougou. The Junior Doctors Association of Sierra Leone, or JUDASIL, says its members will continue with ongoing strikes until the government resolves their concerns. The doctors embarked on a strike in solidarity with one of their members who was allegedly attacked by senior government officials at Connaught Hospital in the capital, Freetown. The doctors are demanding an independent and thorough investigation into the alleged attack and the prosecution of the officials responsible with the full force of the law. Local media reports the strike is sharply disrupting the country's healthcare system, which they say is already strained due to the coronavirus. A government statement says it is looking into the circumstances surrounding the alleged assault in an effort to resolve the concerns of the doctors. Critics say the doctors should return to work as officials investigate the allegations. Dr. Joseph Conte is the Secretary General of the Junior Doctors Association of Sierra Leone. He tells me that representatives of the government have yet to meet with leaders of the group to resolve their concerns.
On the 13th of April, the executive of the Junior Doctors Association received information that one of its members was being assaulted by officials from the Ministry of Health and Sanitation. We found out that the cleaners working at the Connaught Hospital had been on strike for the past 12 months and had not been paid over that period of time. That had led to the accumulation of filth in the facility. The junior doctors working at the facility have been complaining about this issue and calling on relevant authorities to salvage the problem. The officials from the ministry yesterday, the chief medical officer, the deputy minister of health one, and the permanent secretary came into the facility, apparently with the idea of replacing the old cleaners with new ones. That was the event this young, proactive female doctor decided to record on her phone, which the permanent secretary saw and asked that the doctor deletes the video from her phone. During that event, the permanent secretary grabbed the doctor by the hand. It was doing that push and pull that the doctor sustains an injury on her elbow in the presence of the chief medical officer and the deputy minister of health one. We saw it that it was a violation of our rights, and we stand in solidarity with this young female doctor. That was why, as an association, we laid down tools to see how the government would address this problem.
Well, Dr. Conte, I understand the government has put out a statement basically saying your concerns will be addressed and this issue with the young female doctor would also be addressed. Why isn't this enough for you to return to save lives like your oath requires?
So we have always remained committed to saving the lives of patients as the Hippocratic Oath demands, which is why amid this problem at the Connaught Hospital, we've seen doctors literally jumping over maggots to go see their patients on the ward, or stepping on broken or used needles to get into the wards to see their patients. But you cannot have a case of a physical assault, more so on a female medical doctor, and reassures people that they should go to their normal businesses. We want this matter to be treated with utmost seriousness and urgency.
Well, Dr. Conte, are you therefore saying that the statement issued by the government and by extension the assurances that this matter will be resolved expeditiously aren't enough for you to return to work and suspend this strike?
In the past, we've seen an official from the same ministry assaulting a doctor at the same Connaught Hospital, and that matter was just swept beneath the carpet. How are we sure that this one is not going to be treated the same way? So we don't just want to be dwelling on reassurances. We want to get urgent resolutions to the current problem.
Dr. Conte, what are the key issues that you want the government to address immediately?
The key issues are the current sanitary situation at the Connaught Hospital and the inadequate water supply at the PCMH Hospital, which is a maternity hospital. We want those to be improved, and of course we need justice for our colleague.
So far, what has been the reaction of the government?
So far, we've not seen much from the side of the government. As I said, the reasons that led to the strike are the sanitary situation at the Connaught Hospital and the inadequate water supply at PCMH, in addition to the physical assaults of our colleague. So we'd want to see solutions to these problems as soon as possible. If members start seeing, steps leading to solving these problems, I think we'll be reassured. And we also want to see the government actively involving the Junior Doctors Association with the Sierra Leone Medical and Dental Association in bringing resolutions to these problems.
Dr. Joseph Conte is the Secretary General of the Junior Doctors Association of Sierra Leone. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. Representatives of Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front, or PF, have unanimously chosen incumbent President Edgar Chagwalungu as the party's presidential candidate for the August 12 general election. The PF says the president is popular enough to win a second-term mandate. Others say he faces stiff competition from Hakainde Hichilema of the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND. Meanwhile, UPND parliamentarian Bampi Kapalasa has filed a petition at the Constitutional Court seeking clarification over whether the president can legally run again. This after some analysts argue that Mr. Lungu is disqualified because he concluded the term of deceased President Michael Sata and subsequently won an election afterwards. However, in 2018, the Constitutional Court ruled that since the president did not serve a full term, he can seek re-election. For more on the legal challenge and the ruling party's decision to stick with President Lungu in the upcoming presidential and parliamentary polls, I reached Sunday Chanda, Communications Director of the Patriotic Front.
The Patriotic Front has settled for Republican President Dr. Edgar Chagwalungu as our candidate for the August 12th, 2021 election. This decision has been arrived at as a popular decision, as a unanimous decision by all the 10 provinces and all the party structures, the National Council of the Patriotic Front and the General Assembly, the General Conference of the Patriotic Front. I wish to also say that this decision is, again, a confirmation of the very fact that President Edgar Lungu is eligible to contest the 2021 election. And secondly, it's also a confirmation that President Edgar Lungu is the strongest competitor in this election. He'll be the strongest candidate on the ballot paper on 12th August 2021.
Talking about eligibility, I know a member of parliament from the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, has filed a petition at the Constitutional Court seeking clarification to determine whether the president is qualified or not. Isn't the party concerned about this?
Well, the Member of Parliament for Katuba constituency, the UPND Member of Parliament for Katuba constituency, has gone to court seeking, of course, for clarity on this particular matter. And in his application before the courts of law, the Honourable Member Babi contends that he believes that President Edgar Lungu is eligible and that he qualifies to contest this election. Now, don't ask me how he's arrived at that position, but I want to believe that it's been a matter of common sense that the courts had pronounced themselves on this particular matter. And what we saw yesterday was the opposition UPND as a party distancing themselves from this particular action by their member of parliament. We are looking forward to the court putting this matter to rest. We know for a fact that the same arguments that were raised by State Council John Sangwa are the same arguments that are being raised today. And so it's not anything that changes the outcome. The outcome still remains the same because it's the same arguments being taken to the same court. And we want to believe that the courts will still be very consistent with their previous ruling.
On Sunday, opposition parties have leveled several criticisms against what they described as the president's ineffectiveness in addressing challenges facing the country. They came out with some form of an alliance with the plan of presenting a unified front to defeat the president in the upcoming elections. What is your take on that?
The people of Zambia are saying to the opposition that don't just make allegations, but can you also provide alternatives? You also remember that when the opposition got together with the purpose of dislodging President Lungu and the Patriotic Front from power, we said this alliance would not work. It was a marriage of convenience. And true to our word, as we speak, the opposition alliance has crumbled. And the Patriotic Front is eating into opposition strongholds.
The northwestern part of Zambia is almost turning green. The western part of Zambia is almost turning green, and we're making very good inroads in southern province.
Well, Sunday Chanda, I understand Charles Kakoma, the former UPND spokesperson, defected from the party and has joined your ranks. Do you expect any momentum or any impact that his presence in your party could have ahead of the elections?
As you know, that Comrade Charles Kakoma is a very strong, a political figure, especially in northwestern province, the northwestern part of Zambia. These are the men who strengthened UPND's hold on northwestern province. He's one of the major gatekeepers in northwestern province. And so besides him being a leader at national level, his base is very strong in northwestern province. And we believe that he's going to be very instrumental in turning PF's fortunes in what used to be a stronghold for the UPND. And he joins the rank of Comrade Kapita and many other comrades. And already they are doing a commendable job in northwestern province, dismantling the UPND structures and harvesting as many numbers as they possibly can. And so, yes, his impact is going to be felt, both on our end positively, but the UPND will feel the impact of Charles Kakoma, especially in northwestern province.
Sunday Chanda is the communications director of the Zambian ruling Patriotic Front. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Uganda, a prominent human rights lawyer says the international community must take action to stop rights abuses in the East African country. Nicholas Opiyo says those responsible for the abuses should be held accountable for the actions. His remarks come after the UN-appointed independent human rights expert expressed alarm about the post-election crackdown carried out by state security organizations. They condemned the killing of at least 50 people in what the group described as the brutal policing methods used following the January presidential and parliamentary elections. They also expressed concern about reports of continued repression of opposition leaders and their supporters. Incumbent President Yoweri Museveni was declared winner of the presidential election, but main challenger Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, rejected the poll outcome, citing voter irregularities and rigging. Human rights lawyer Nicholas Opiyo tells me that ongoing human rights abuses are unacceptable. He says the international community must pressure the administration in Kampala to stop violating the rights of citizens.
First of all, we are not surprised by the findings and statements of the UN special procedures. Those of us who work here will tell you that these statements, late as may have come in the process, reflect the broader concerns around election violence, disappearances, and extrajudicial killings by the Ugandan government in the period leading up to the election, during the election, and after the election. So we welcome the statement, but think that those statements, important as they are, must be accompanied with real meaningful actions in terms of engagement with the Ugandan government and efforts to hold to account individuals or agencies of the state that were involved in the acts of human rights violations in this time.
As part of the engagement, what else do you think the UN human rights experts can do, or even the UN can do, to see some changes that some of you human rights defenders and lawyers and opposition groups are seeking from the government?
The United Nations is an intergovernmental organization. So admittedly, they have to act in accordance with the political interests of the state, of member states of the UN. But in so doing, the UN must examine the work of its agencies. For instance, UNDP in Uganda is knee-deep with a repressive regime in terms of programs, in terms of support to the government. The UN must conduct an internal review to ensure that not a single dollar of the UN is being used to facilitate this violation. That would be an important first step. The second step is that the UN must raise this concern as an important matter in New York, at the UN headquarters, at the United Nations in New York. It is baffling that Uganda is holding or posturing as a key member of the UN Friends of the Rule of Law, and yet back home here is engaged in acts of heinous, grave human rights violation. So Uganda must be put to task at the UN level. This matter must be raised with the General Assembly, but also must be raised at the UN Security Council, because this is in fact a matter that impacts on global safety and security. We are building a society that might recline into violence.
Some people are suggesting that those who are falling foul of the law have sought to undermine Uganda's territorial integrity and political stability, and that is why the law enforcement and by extension some of the security organizations are cracking down on them just to ensure that the rest of Uganda remains peaceful. How do you react to that?
The vast majority of people who are shot and killed, and indeed the vast majority of people who are now imprisoned or have disappeared, are people who are not involved in any criminality, but were rather people engage in peaceful political protest. To paint all of them with a broad brush as rioters, as saboteurs, would be to undermine and delegitimize the legitimate work that we're doing around the election. And so the broad statement by the Ugandan government that seeks to demonize people who are in fact involved in a political process must be repeated, and there must be a pushback against it. Secondly, there is no doubt that there were individuals who were involved in acts of criminality. Those individuals must be investigated. But that does not justify a blanket, widespread abduction and disappearances of many young people predominantly involved with opposition activities in the country.
So if they are not cooperating to exercise their constitutional right and they are destabilizing the country, causing trouble, supporters of the government say the government has a constitutional right and mandate to protect life and property, and that is simply what they are doing. Your take?
The government has the legal and legitimate rights to maintain law and order, and individuals who are breaking the law must be brought to account. That is no carte blanche to the government applying extrajudicial means in enforcing the law. Regardless of whatever somebody may have been involved in, if government indeed perceives them to be engaged in acts that are criminal, they have to arrest them lawfully, subject them to due process.
Nicholas Opiyo is a prominent Ugandan human rights lawyer. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. A South African mobile communications company has launched a free mobile phone application to help victims who are targets of gender-based violence, a problem which has soared during the pandemic lockdown. The app was developed by Vodacom South Africa in partnership with its British parent company and the charity Hestia. For VOA, Franco Pugliese reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Janine, a 53-year-old South African woman who does not want to use her family name, was in an abusive relationship for 2 years. It got worse when her boyfriend lost work because of the coronavirus pandemic and took his frustration out on her. Janine recalls in anguish those dark moments of her relationship, not knowing what to do.
He was mean and nasty and cruel and wanted to hurt me physically, emotionally, verbally, mentally. They make you financially dependent on them. Then you think, where am I going to go? There's nowhere to go. What do I do?
To help Janine and other survivors of gender-based violence, the South African telecoms company Vodacom, along with its British parent company Vodafone and the charity Estia, launched the mobile application Bright Sky last November. Vodacom executive officer Takalani Netshintense says Bright Sky provides a wide range of service.
The app has got a suite of 12 services, or you can call them functionalities, you will be able to determine if you are in an abusive relationship or not. The app also has emergency services. It's a directory of emergency services, which include geolocation, because as soon as you put in where you are using the app from, it will be able to identify your location and it will pinpoint you to the nearest facility.
Vodacom says Bright Sky allows users to get help without the stigma of having to ask for it. It says the app has been downloaded about 1,000 times in South Africa, helping many women like Janine.
What I like about this app is there are two areas. You can get advice for yourself or for someone else. It gives you a whole lot of scenarios. It explains what happens. It gives you a number where you can phone. There's a lot of information.
The app comes in three South African languages, English, Sesotho and isiZulu. South African police say reported annual sexual assaults have been rising since 2016 and hit more than 53,000 last year. Activists blame the pandemic lockdowns and say the actual number of assaults, including those to go unreported, are much higher. Franco Puglisi for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The United Nations World Food Programme warns millions of people in West and Central Africa are facing catastrophic levels of hunger driven by conflict and soaring food prices. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
More than 31 million people, an increase of 10 million over last year, are expected to be unable to feed themselves during the upcoming June to August lean season. This period precedes the next harvest and is the time of year when food stocks in West Africa are at their lowest. A UN food analysis finds nearly 2.7 million people are a step away from famine. Among them, it says some 800,000 people are facing emergency levels of hunger in northeast Nigeria's conflict-ridden states of Borno, Adamawa, and Yobe. World Food Programme spokesman Thompson Feary says years of conflict have uprooted millions of people from their homes, destroying their livelihoods and making them dependent upon international aid. He says high food prices also are stoking the growing hunger emergency in the region.
They have increased sharply across West Africa, leaving millions of people struggling to meet their basic food needs. The price of virtually all local staples has shot up. In some areas, prices are 200% higher, the highest levels since 2008.
WFP reports escalating violence in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger is deepening food shortages for some 6.5 million people who are growing hungrier and more desperate by the day. Feary says malnutrition is worsening in the region. He notes a staggering 10 million children under age 5 are estimated to be acutely malnourished, a condition that is life-threatening and inhibits their physical and mental development.
Almost half of those children in the Sahel countries are faced with high levels of global acute malnutrition, out of which 70%, approximately 3.3 million, will need emergency food and nutrition assistance immediately.
WFP is scaling up its emergency food operation. It plans to help nearly 18 million people in 19 countries in West and Central Africa this year. The agency is appealing for $770 million to implement its humanitarian operation in the coming 6 months. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Haya jui, haya jui, vigoza kwa Thank you. I don't like another man on your timetable. I don't like it, even the homies you running it, you calling your friends. I don't like the way you're getting high without me. I dislike it. You rolling with the wrong ones, you looking funny. Whoa, 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 yeah. You're a blessing from the highest, I can guarantee. Keeping it private on the regular is what you need. Step out the hot box and dance for me. Shake off the boobies with an MC. No, go, go, susang, and ya, kababa, loki. Anytime you show, I go hinduka. Anytime you touch me, I lose control. No, go, go, susang, and ya, kukaga, che, baby. In any case, there is a kunyakundira. In any case, tonight, pretty dangerous. Wildin' it, we wildin' it. Wildin' it, my baby. Looking serious, but I know you're super high, moving curious. Your cup's so full with a jetty on the rocks tonight. Give you about an hour and you're by my side. Put a tecato, talk to me. Mas me si no van a su cori. I need a delay, I need you around me. Come to think about it, you're the reason I've been empty. You're a blessing from the highest, I can guarantee. Keep it private on the regular is what you need. Step out the hot box and dance for me. Shake off the groupies at the Nancy. No, go, go, some song, and ya, kababa, roloki. Anytime you show, I go hinduka. Anytime you touch me, I lose control. No, go, go, some song, and ya, kukaga, che, baby. In any case, there is a kunyakundira. In any case, tonight, to the
Calypso, calypso, una nipenda, la rimbana di calypso. And if I told you where kendo mami mina mind unaweza nyamine. I know they told you not to trust me, but to get a foot away, zipata kamime. And so see when I was in my shore, can me some makito taki baspole. So we chore ya mangati, rada yetu ni safi, I wanna make you happy, my only.
Was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Bill Eagle, reporter Douglas Impuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, from the little dead seeds, great things are born. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.